Blog Talk Radio.
My dear friends, Christians and non-Christians alike, those of you who are interested in truth and facts, not in political rhetoric and media lies, this is a politically incorrect show, not a politically correct show. We aim to get the facts, we aim to get the truth through critical thinking. And most of all, I urge you, all my friends who are listening, to read the great books. And if you read the great books, your mind will be expanded immeasurably, whether it's John Milton's Paradise Lost or St. Augustine's Confessions or the Epistles of Paul. All of these books will raise you immeasurably from where you're sitting, hopefully. Now, I'd like to tell you that I'm a Christian, and I believe in the full authority of Holy Scripture from Genesis to Revelation, and I adhere to the creeds of the Church, the Athanasian, Apostles, and Nicene Creed. And if I read a book, I read C.S. Lewis, I read G.K. Chesterton, I read T.S. Eliot, I read St. Augustine, I read the Epistles of Paul, and Milton. Most of all, I read Milton's Paradise Lost, which is the greatest, greatest epic poem on the fall of man into sin, which Milton saw as a critical event in history. He was right. He analyzed it correctly. And those of you, I urge you to read Paradise Lost as well as Paradise Regained and Samson Agonistes, all written while this man was blind. Such was the power of his intellect that he produced this work in his blindness. I'd also like to tell you that I run two radio shows, a Blog Talk radio show and a podcast radio show. And these shows have many visitors from many countries all over the world. And I'm pleased to say that I have a number of visitors from Saudi Arabia to my Blog Talk radio show and from other Muslim countries. And I'm very happy to say that over 4,400 people have visited my podcast from 80 countries and from a number of Muslim countries. And I'm very happy to greet and welcome my Muslim brothers and sisters, in the name of Jesus and his love. I welcome them. I want to talk to them. I want to dialogue with them. I want to know them. I want to understand them and speak to them in every way. I also have written 10 books. These also are Christian books and legal books. I've written 5 Christian books, Essays in the Christian Worldview, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, a book on the parables, and a book on the Psalms. And the Psalms book has been recently completed. It's selling very well. And it is September pick of the month for Barnes & Noble, advertised as such. This book on the Psalms are the manner of the church, according to John Donne, the great Anglican poet and preacher and minister. And I recommend them. The Psalms are the inspired voice of Christ speaking to us in great Hebrew lyric poetry. They're great poetry. They're great. They inspire me. I can't stop reading them, and I'll never stop reading them. I memorized them when I was a young man in Sunday school. I memorized the 1st, 2nd, and 23rd Psalm, among others. I've never regretted learning the Psalms and understanding them, and I read them, a number of them, in Hebrew in seminary, in Princeton Theological Seminary. I'm a graduate of Princeton Seminary, and I had a background in biblical languages, Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. And therefore, my Hebrew is a little bit rusty today, but I did read the Psalms, at least some of them in Hebrew, and I benefited greatly from them. I have written over 800 blogs, 900 actually, visited by many people from many countries all over the world, of course, from Muslim countries in China. And I'm very pleased that the many, many visitors from all countries all over the world have visited and uploaded these blogs. I'm formatting these blogs into 2 books, which will be published soon. I'm also writing a book on the miracles in the Bible. And I have a partially completed law book on pretrial motions and hearings in criminal law. And I also I'm planning a book on the book of Job, an Edomite, not a Jewish man, but he's in there, right there in the Hebrew Bible. And he comes from a Greek culture background, It's a wonderful book. It's a fascinating book. And I think you'll benefit in my commenting on it. I've written 3 major articles on the Syracuse Law Review and on the Academicus, an Albanian scientific journal, on the educational system of the United States and sexual orientation discrimination. And they have been bought by many, many libraries all over the world, particularly in Europe, and in particular by the State Department and the United States Supreme Court. I'm pleased to say these articles of mine have been found to have value in many sectors of the world. Now, that's as much as I have to say about my background. And I want to talk about, what I want to talk about partially today is about feminism. Feminism is let me just find what I want to say here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to have divide this into 2 sections, it will be a discussion of feminism. Just 1 second, I will tell you what it is. Hold on 1 second. The feminist movement. You found it in a chapter in my book, Essays in the Christian Worldview, on page 77. And I will give a few brief words concerning this chapter, and which I think you'll find of value and interesting. Feminist movement. When I analyze it in this book of mine, it has its roots and basic roots in the idea of the patriarchal system of the past, whereby the male sex husbands, heads of state, kings, counselors, or cardinals, subjugated the female sex to their purposes and ends. And the system was, and I don't know whether it was good or bad, but the husband called the shots and supported his wife and family, providing financial and emotional support. The head of state, or king, and his male counselors ran the kingdom, and the senators and representatives of the public who voted or who all held office were only men. Now, the feminist movement says this wasn't good. This subjugation was bad. And the ladies say that this was a method of men's gaining or dominating family leadership, holding major offices of business and state, and even ruling the religious hierarchy. But things have changed a bit, thankfully. I think women should have full opportunities in the workforce. I don't think there's a question about it. And we've seen women as prime ministers in England, India, and Israel, being ordained as priests in the Anglican Church, and cabinet members and elected members of the Senate and House in the United States. I think it's right that women should have a quality opportunity in the public and corporate office and in all professions and family. And I think the old patriarchal system of societal domination by fathers and husbands should end. I think women should have full opportunity in the workforce. And really, I have no argument with the obvious truth that men and women share the same human nature and are entitled to the full panoply of rights and opportunities as citizens of the Republic. There can be no argument raised that half the minds and potentialities of the human race should be limited and confined to household tastes. As I said, I have no dispute. I think women should have full equality in the workforce, full equality of opportunity, and I don't think our half the human race should be wasted in housework. So I have no dispute with the quest of women for full equality and opportunity, but what I do have an argument with is the possible image of sharpness and aggressiveness that feminists adopt in their desire to be equal and think they believe necessary to compete effectively with the male-dominant world. I think that there are a certain percentage of women that conclude that all men are tough, sharp, aggressive, etc., and they should be too. The feminists, we seem to believe that surrounded by our macho culture, they must become this to obtain full respect and equality. This particular person's persona and belief about the male sex is mistaken. It's incorrect that all men share the personality of football players, and the male sex, just as the female sex, can be nurturing, dependent, or even feminine, just as the female sex, depending on the woman, can be aggressive and dominant and have a male personality. I think the feminists feel that this stereotypical personality ilk was the method by which the male sex obtained dominance over the physically weaker female, and that for women to gain equality, this tough, sharp quality had to be adopted and imitated. Of course, where I differ in this analysis, that I don't think all men are tough or unfeeling, nor are all women kind and considerate. These qualities are equally distributed through both sexes. I speak as a man. Men may be more insensitive than women in some areas. And there are many men who are nurturers and fathers and wish to be fathers as much as women want to be mothers. It is, I think, extremely ironic that the supposedly insensitive male species has produced the most sensitive love poetry, most stirring oratorios, and most beautiful works of art. So the idea of men being tough, inconsiderate, and callous is obviously incorrect. There are sensitive men. There are men who are football players. There are men who are poets. There are men who write oratorios and who do great sculpture. They are quite sensitive and as sensitive as women. However, so there's a bit of a mistake in the feminist view of the image of the cutting-edge male. I don't think it's a desirable quality. If toughness, callousness, and lack of feeling are traditional male qualities, it's a matter of dispute whether they're worthy of imitation. These are primitive, uncivilized, brutish qualities, or the qualities of less developed minds and personalities. They're not to be imitated, and I think feminists are mistaken in assuming it's a male quality and including it's a desirable personal quality. So men and women can show as much love to each other and to their children as anybody in the world. All men are linked together, whatever our religion and our age, in some sort of love and connection. And we're all together in this situation. We're all part of the main, and every woman and woman's death diminishes us. To imitate and laud the stupidest and most violent, most cruel characteristics of the male nature is essentially to ignore the male sex that has produced Buddha, Confucius, Jesus, Moses, Shakespeare, Milton, Handel, Dante, Bach, Virgil, and Homer. So what am I going to say here? To be tough and biting and cruel is to stereotype the male sex in ignoring the caring qualities of the male sex for the qualities of moral reprobates and criminals. As I say, to be tough and feeling and caring are undesirable qualities in any man or woman, and not to be considered worthy of imitation. So I conclude the feminist movement is good in that it argues for and obtains full equality in the workforce. I think there should be full equality in the workforce. I think people's intellect should have full the chance to be developed in work or any other area. However, I think it's a mistake to adopt the lowest and most desirable male qualities, to be tough or unfeeling. This is a personal error. Qualities are not male or female qualities, but negative qualities. And insofar as a feminist adopts these qualities, it is wrong. So what am I going to say here? I've talked about feminism. I think there should be full equality in the workforce and in every other part of life. But I think it's a mistake for women to imitate and stereotype the male, supposed male qualities of toughness, callousness, insensitivity, when in fact they're not male qualities at all. They're qualities equally distributed through men and women, and there are many men who are quite as sensitive as women, and many men have produced the most sensitive love poetry, most stirring oratorios, and most beautiful works of art. Obviously, feminism makes a mistake in imitating callousness and sadism and coolness as desirable qualities and as male qualities. That's as much as I have to say about feminism. I think it's a good movement. I think that people should have equality of opportunity and their brains should have full ability to develop. I don't think there's any question about it, but I think there's a question whether feminists are correct in imitating the supposedly brutal, callous qualities of men, which are not male qualities at all, but are qualities equally distributed in male or female. I think I've spoken about feminism here as much as I wish to, and tomorrow night I'm going to speak about it again, again in a more and hit a number of other areas that I think I have a concern for in the feminist movement. I hope you've enjoyed this little talk, and I hope you gain some knowledge from my discussion of feminism and its positive qualities and its defects. Feminism is a good thing because it's good that people should have a full chance to develop and work in other areas. It is not good if it's an imitation of some sort of caricature of men, which the men who produced the Keats and the Shelleys and the Byrons and the Handels and the Bachs. These are the men worthy of imitation, not a bunch of football players. Afraid not. Take care. Good night.